This week on Myths and Legends, there are two stories from China, and you'll see why you shouldn't go to work drunk, you might inadvertently commit to arresting a tiger, and how you can find hope in the unlikeliest of places, but only if you make a habit of tearing the throats out of deer for friends and family. The creature this week is the King of Teeth, or the Tooth Tyrant, or Tooth Lord, who sent the greatest conqueror the world has ever known straight back home. This is Myths and Legends, episode 362, Broken. This is a podcast where we tell stories from mythology and folklore. Some are incredibly popular tales you might think you know, but with surprising origins, and others are stories that might be new to you, but are definitely worth a listen. Today, there are two stories of self-discovery, redemption, coming to grips with who you are, and tiger murder. We'll talk about them as we go, but we'll jump in first with two clay water pots who hate each other. The pot could not believe it and the other pot were from the same batch, made by the same potter. The pot was a perfect pot. It was watertight, it was light and strong, not like that other pot. The other pot was just, ugh. Maybe the craftsman was having an off day. Maybe it was a Friday and he just wanted to finish it up. Whatever it was, the other pot was just made wrong. It had a crack in it. Its handle swung a weird way. It was way too heavy and dense in a way that made it oscillate wildly. It made the servant compensate in a weird way that, over the years, would cause her back to go bad. It wasn't like the perfect pot. The perfect pot did its job. It held water perfectly. It never spilled. Each day, the water bearer brought back only 1.5 pots of water, when she could bring back 2. This went on for 2 years. The perfect pot did some quick math, and that was 182 pots of water missed because of the cracked pot's failure. Nearly 3 months worth of water fetching. You are trash, the perfect pot said to the cracked pot. You're actually worse than trash because at least everyone knows trash is worthless. You go on making people think you can do something, that you're like the rest of us pots. But what you really do is make everyone's life more difficult. You make it so Master wastes so much effort. Your brokenness is a blight on everyone. The cracked pot got this most days. That's the definition of a hostile work environment. The pots had no way of knowing, because they didn't have necks, that the water bearer was standing behind them. To gasps, she knelt down and hooked their handles on the stick that she rested on her back each morning, and, without a word, began the long walk out to the well. For some reason, the walk wasn't made more conversational, because the water bearer knew the objects had sentience and could talk. And when they arrived at the water, she set the pots down. I'm sorry, the cracked pot said, breaking the silence. For what? The water bearer smiled. For being broken, the cracked pot said. We're all broken in our own ways. The water bearer dipped the perfect pot into the water. No, but like, I'm actually broken. Every day I spill half my water on the walk back. I make it more difficult for you and everyone else. You heard the perfect pot this morning. I should probably just be trash. It would be easier for everyone. The cracked pot heard the perfect pot give a self-satisfied, when the water bearer set it down. And is an easy life a good one? The water bearer made it clear that it was a rhetorical question when she dunked the cracked pot in the water before it could respond. As she fastened the cracked pot's handle to the stick, the cracked pot could feel the water begin to trickle out the bottom. The water bearer hefted the load onto her shoulders and began the long walk up to the hillside. Back home. As she walked, she talked. The cracked pot assumed that its crack was a flaw, that because it was made different, it made it less than the other pots, right? The pot said, but didn't it? It was supposed to carry water. A crack kept it from carrying water efficiently. It was a pot. Is that what you think you are? The water bearer said, and gestured to the road ahead. There were two sides of the road, as there are with most. On the side on which the perfect pot hung, the road was cracked, dry, and barren. An endless stretch of lifeless nothing. On the side with the cracked pot, though, well, the road bloomed with countless colors. I scattered the wildflower seeds when I bought you. I chose you for this purpose. Every day, you contribute to making something beautiful. Not because you're perfect, but because you're not. You're exactly what you should be, the water bearer said. Because of the cracked pot, not just the water bearer's master, but everyone who walked along this road had beautiful flowers they could enjoy and use to decorate their homes. Anybody can make a perfect pot, and many have. But it took a pot with a crack like this one, who swings just so, to bring the flowers on the barren road to bloom. The trio walked without another word, but the cracked pot marveling at the beauty it apparently swung by every day, so preoccupied with its own supposed uselessness that it couldn't see the beauty it was responsible for. It swelled with pride as it saw the water bearer gather some flowers and take them inside. I originally encountered this short tale in a book about Japanese aesthetics, but it appears to be a Buddhist parable, possibly originating in India. I did find it in a Chinese collection, but it's really anyone's guess because a person transporting a pot of water could literally fit in any ancient and early medieval culture. And I've actually found Christian versions of the story as well. Next up, all right, feel good stories of embracing imperfection out of the way. Let's get up to some tiger murder. Tang was a good son. Their house, which stood on the outskirts of town, it was not much. It was a shanty of grass and mud. Tang's father had built it. He and the mother made their own love story. Both servants in the house of a lord, they fell in love at an older age and went to build a life together. It would be difficult, they knew, but it would be theirs. On this earth, nothing is forever. Tang's father was able to see the face of his son before the illness took him. Mother Tang, as the story calls her, scraped by until Tang was old enough to swing an axe and head out into the forest. Each day, he would cut wood and bring it back before the market closed, trading it for food and other provisions. Together, by the light of a dwindling fire, each night, mother and son would spend time together. They knew they were struggling, but they were grateful for one another. Tang for the mother who loved him, and the mother for the son who looked after her. She was pushing 70 and felt her time short. She knew it wouldn't be like this forever, so they both cherished each day. The hut might not be a house, but it was a home. One afternoon, while enjoying the blossoms blowing in the wind and awaiting Tang's return, Mother Tang had an unsettled feeling. She told herself it was merely the last grasp of winter, refusing to let go. A chill that still lingered on the warm spring breeze. The feeling stuck, though, in the back of her mind, growing until it consumed her thoughts. Something had happened to her boy. The sun set before Tang returned. Mother Tang hobbled to the market. Surely he was there. He probably came into some unexpected wealth, and he was purchasing a surprise for her. He was such a good son, after all. But the merchants in the market hadn't seen him all day. The one he traded with for food had set aside his bundle and offered it to the mother free of charge. But she was so distressed that she simply rushed down the road away from the market. The following morning, a neighbor returned to tell Mother Tang what she already knew. They had searched for hours at first light, far beyond the sun's usual area. Mother Tang shook her head. That didn't mean anything. That just meant he wasn't in his usual area. He could be... The neighbor held out something that Mother Tang recognized. A piece of clothing, torn and bloody. They found it next to the young man's axe up on the hill. The woman grasped the cloth, holding it to her chest. She sobbed. Her boy her only son was gone. They say that time heals, but that was not the case for Mother Tang. She refused the food that friends and neighbors brought, refused any comfort. She could only think of the panicked, agonizing last moments of her only child, of the life that was supposed to be so much longer, so much fuller, of children and grandchildren. The injustice of the world felt like it was burning a hole in her brain. Meanwhile, she tore at her clothes and her hair and beat her chest. People tried to comfort her with talk of the gods, but she only chased them away. The gods had chosen for her boy to die. They were the problem. She knew the gods wouldn't help her, but maybe people would. Maybe there could be justice in this world. You'll see why your workplace needs a bouncer, but that will be right after this. Here on our podcast, we like to share stories we love. Well, another thing we love is great sleep.
And because of that, we really like the folks at Ghostbed.
Yeah, first of all, Ghostbed is a family-owned company with over 20 years of experience. They know how to craft the perfect mattress.
You want durable, supportive, and long-lasting materials. And you get that. But what sets Ghostbed apart for us is their signature and patented cooling technology.
This is the number one reason we love Ghostbed.
There's no reason to go to sleep sweaty and restless any longer. A good mattress should be comfortable and cool so you can sleep like a dream.
From start to sleep, the process is easy. When you purchase a Ghostbed mattress, your comfort is guaranteed. Enjoy their 101-night sleep trial, which is risk-free. That's the true test. Plus, they offer free shipping and most items ship within 24 hours.
Visit ghostbed.com/legends to save 50% off site-wide.
I recommend their number one selling Ghostbed Lux, designed with memory foam and, again, that signature cooling technology. It reacts and adjusts to your body heat as you sleep.
Feel free to use their team of sleep experts or take Founder Mark's mattress quiz to find your perfect fit. Either way, we appreciate how personal and simple it was to get better sleep with Ghostbed. It's quality mattresses at a fantastic price, and it is worth it.
Ready for a more comfortable night of sleep? Visit ghostbed.com/legends. And because we're all about sharing the love here on Myths and Legends, use the code LEGENDS to save 50% off your purchase site-wide. That's right, 50%.
Did you know that even if you have a 401k for retirement, you can still have an IRA?
Robinhood has the only IRA that gives you a 3% boost on every dollar you contribute when you subscribe to Robinhood Gold.
But get this. Now through April 30th, Robinhood is even boosting every single dollar you transfer in from other retirement accounts with a 3% match. That's right. No cap on the 3% match.
Robinhood Gold gets you the most for your retirement, thanks to their IRA with a 3% match. This offer is good through April 30th. Get started at robinhood.com/boost. Subscription fees apply. And now for some legal info.
Claim as of Q1 2024 validated by Radius Global Market Research. Investing involves risk, including loss. Limitations apply to IRAs and 401ks. 3% match requires Robinhood Gold for 1 year from the date of first 3% match. Must keep Robinhood IRA for 5 years. The 3% matching on transfers is subject to specific terms and conditions. Robinhood IRA available to U.S. customers in good standing. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, is a registered broker-dealer.
Who let the weeping elderly woman in? The Mandarin, the imperial bureaucrat who served as judge for the region, asked his attendants. One of his underlings raised a hand. Was that a problem? Do you think I would say for the official record that someone shouldn't let a clearly distraught and anguished elderly woman in to ask something of the Empire, when the point of these open forums is for regular people to ask something of the Empire? The Mandarin paused. No, you wouldn't want that sort of thing on the record, the underling said. The Mandarin said that that's correct. Also, it's the Tiger Woman. How many times are they going to do this with the Tiger Woman? The Mandarin turned, I'm sorry, ma'am, but it's a tiger who killed your son. And he needs to be brought to justice, Mother Tang pointed. There needs to be a trial and a sentence and an execution. How? How can a tiger stand trial? We've talked about this, the Mandarin said. But today was the day. It was the day that Mother Tang would not let this go. There would be justice for her son. Should I just write down howling? Is it howling or shrieking? Definitely weeping, the scribe looked down the hallway. Definitely some weeping. Having a poor, bereaved woman forcibly removed from your presence was an even worse look than not letting her into your presence to begin with. The Mandarin had to do something. Okay, a tiger can't stand trial, but it can be caught and punished. Just go home and wait to be summoned to court. He would make sure it happened. Mother Tang stopped crying and wiped her nose. He would? Yes, of course, the Mandarin smiled, his hearing muffled and ears ringing in the sudden silence. And you'll sign the order right now in front of my eyes that the tiger will be arrested and brought to judgment in this hall? Mother Tang asked. The Mandarin said, well, I mean, if someone drew it up, which could take... I got it, boss, the same attendant from earlier quickly jotted down the order. The Mandarin forced a smile, thanking the great employee for thwarting his plan to just send someone off into the forest for a few days and come back saying the tiger died, falling off a waterfall in a struggle like the Joker or Moriarty or something. The Mandarin looked at the document and shook his head. Oh, well, there it was. Part of this was missing. Who would risk their lives to bring justice for a dead woodcutter, arresting a tiger who posed no evident threat to the village? Hmm? Anyone? He smiled. Yeah, that's what he thought. Li Ning was nailing this being drunk at work thing. The only thing he hated more than being assigned to follow the Mandarin to the provinces was being sober while being assigned to the provinces. It was only a few years, and the more days he could spend blasted out of his mind, the fewer days he had to be present in this horrible place. He spent his days managing to stay upright, with the help of the walls, and finding increasingly creative places to vomit. His appointment was going very well. The problem with not paying attention in class or being so blitzed that you have a difficult time staying vertical is that on a long enough timeline, you will get called on. Or you'll be so drunk that you think you were called on. The friend to his right gave him a poke, probably on account of the swaying, and Li Ning stepped forward. Yep, got it. Will do, boss. He smiled with a nod. The Mandarin arched his eyebrows. Okay, let the record show that Li Ning has offered to arrest a live tiger and bring it here to the court for punishment. Li Ning adopted a stern face. Yes, he would do that for his... Wait, what? Sorry, the tiger can't be found, Li Ning paced. He hadn't had a drink for 4 days. Being told you volunteered to arrest a live tiger is very sobering news. Li Ning, the Mandarin put his hands together, you didn't need to volunteer for this. You chose this job. I don't think you actually went into the forest, or if you did, you just sat there for a bit and came back, saying you tried. But wasn't that the original plan? Li Ning shook. Yes, but then you volunteered, the Mandarin said. Regardless, he told the elderly woman that he would bring justice for her son. That was in the official record now. And also, she was very annoying. Li Ning had to go arrest this tiger. Li Ning said it was impossible. He could arrest a man, but not a tiger. No one arrests a tiger. I will have you beaten until you succeed, the Mandarin told Li Ning. Li Ning said he would go seek the guilty tiger if tigers could feel guilt. Li Ning staggered from the palace. Blood had seeped through the bandages on his new wounds, and also his old wounds. When you're whipped every 5 days for failing to arrest a tiger, the wounds kind of blend together in a sticky, macabre mass. 8 beatings in 6 weeks with 50 lashes each beating was, more math than the beleaguered courtier cared to subject himself to. His friends told him that no one would judge him for fleeing in the woods to another province. One out of the Mandarin's purview, he wouldn't last another 6 weeks, and this assignment wasn't worth his life. Li Ning, though, wouldn't leave. This was not only his career, but he could never go home again. Besides, what other job could he do? Who in the other provinces would hire him after abandoning his master, his duty, and his home? No. Here he was, and here he would remain, even if that meant his death. He wasn't alone in his hunt. At first, he hired a hunter to help him. Then, when that didn't pan out, he pumped all of his savings and his family's largesse into as many hunters, trackers, and trappers as necessary. The problem was that there was no telling how many were necessary, because no matter how many he sent after the tiger, all of them returned without the beast. The hunter stayed on long after Li Ning's money ran out, first out of pride, then pity for the man they saw stagger from the palace every 5 days. Eventually, though, even they had to move on. They all had people of their own. They wished Li Ning the best, but feared the worst. It was day 44. If Li Ning returned the following day without the tiger in cuffs, he would get his 9th beating. And he knew that that would be his last. He, once again, found his way into the forest, not to hunt, but to pray. At the mountain temple, far up in the trees, he knelt down before the local god. He begged for forgiveness for failing in his duty, and swore that, in this life or the next, he would never touch another drop of alcohol again. He took a deep breath. Li Ning felt peace, knowing that, whatever the outcome, he had done what he could. He turned, and his eyes met the tiger's. Now, Li Ning had spent the last 6 weeks and change so eager to find the tiger that he hadn't really given any thought to what he would do when he found the tiger. Now, though, he laughed. The tiger, for its part, didn't lunge. It only sat, studying Li Ning. "I would imagine you're going to eat me now, too. Only a fitting end, finding me here in the forest all alone. I'm afraid you'll find me quite tough. The number of times I've been beaten on account of you," Li Ning drove his finger into the tiger's chest. "But hey, that's what you do, right, tiger? You eat people, just like you ate the woodcutter?" Li Ning paced. He was the only person alive supporting his mother, and she's been inconsolable for months now. "I was beaten because you're too much of a coward to answer for the charge of killing the man." Li Ning shook his head. He didn't care anymore. But if he was going to die, he was going to die doing his duty. His chest puffed out. "Tiger, you must come with me to the city to answer for the charge of killing the woodcutter," Li Ning demanded, and braced himself for the tiger's teeth to close around his throat. But the tiger didn't attack. It bowed its head. Li Ning looked around. What? We'll see what's up with this strangely apologetic tiger, but that will, once again, be right after this. How's your sock drawer looking these days? Sad? Drab?
Maybe scary?
Maybe it's time for a spring cleaning and refresh.
Bombas just dropped a bunch of absurdly soft new socks, tees, and underwear to help you get that drawer in a better place, while doing a little good.
Once you go Bombas, I'll be real, you do not go back. It's true. Bombas is just made better and smarter and more comfortable than anything else we've worn.
Like honeycomb arch support.
And anti-blister tabs.
And cushioned footbeds.
We just took a big trip to the other side of the world. I'm telling you, 15 hours on a plane?
That's a very long flight.
Too long. But Bombas compression socks made all the difference.
Not to mention their buttery soft tees and underwear with no itchy tags.
My new travel secret is picking a variety of Bombas sock patterns. That way I know which ones I've already worn and which ones are clean. And I don't have to do, yes, the smell test anymore.
Ew.
Yes, I know. You're welcome, travelers.
That's a good secret. All I know is that the Bombas Spring Collection was a great choice to bring along. Those garden party socks are a lot of fun.
Bombas, a great mission, easy returns and exchanges, the new spring collection, our favorite, your new favorite. Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head over to bombas.com/legends and use code LEGENDS for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/legends and use our code LEGENDS at checkout. What do we have on the literal docket today? Oh, that's a tiger, the Mandarin said, as he sat down and then leapt up and sent his chair flying with a scramble. Li Ning stood next to the tiger with the heavy chain on his neck. He had it with him from the very beginning. He had the chain with him in his bag from the very beginning, carrying it everywhere just in case, and was surprised when the tiger let him slip it on. Even more surprised when the monster walked by his side out of the forest, past the city gate, through the markets and the residential areas, and into the palace. The eager craned to see the live, docile tiger in the Mandarin's court. The smart still gawked, but made sure there was a wall of the eager snacks between them and the wild animal. Get that thing out of here, the Mandarin's voice cracked. Nope, Li Ning's eyes flashed. This was what the judge had wanted. This was why Li Ning had received 400 lashes in the past 6 weeks. It was an impossible task, arresting a live, full-grown male tiger, but Li Ning had done it, so the Mandarin would render his judgment. The Mandarin tried and failed to hide his trembling as he took his seat. The tiger's cat butt plopped on the stone, and the court was quiet. Tiger? The Mandarin said. Did you eat the woodcutter whom you are charged with killing? A sob broke out from the back of the room. With the appearance of the tiger, someone had run to get Mother Tang. The tiger looked back with a grave, downcast face, and then nodded. The Mandarin said, oh, this, okay. Courtroom confession? Unexpected. Not in the least, because it was a tiger confessing. The Mandarin said that the law was the law. The tiger deserved death. He robbed the elderly woman of her only son. She had no one to support her, and the only way out of the execution was unavailable to the tiger, because it was a tiger. I mean, unless a tiger wanted to take the place of her son, he had to be punished with an The Mandarin stopped. He joined the rest of the court in awe of the nodding tiger. Wait, did the tiger just agree to support the elderly woman? The tiger nodded again. The Mandarin furrowed his brow. Okay, this wasn't like that horse that could do math, was it? Clever Hans? Was the tiger only responding to words with a nod? The Mandarin told the tiger to please nod if it wanted to be executed. The tiger did not nod. Okay, nod if you refuse to help the bereaved mother. The tiger, again, did not nod. Okay, nod if you won't not help the woman. The Mandarin looked down as the rest of the court tried to work out if they were waiting for a nod or not. The tiger nodded. The Mandarin shook his head. There wasn't a precedent for this. There wasn't a precedent for arresting a live tiger either, but I did it, Li Ning burst out. The Mandarin agreed. Yes, true. Okay, if the tiger fulfilled the role of the son he killed and supported Mother Tang in her old age, then he was free to return to his mountain home. The people parted as, after Li Ning slipped the chain from the tiger's neck, the tiger walked from the palace and the city, slipping once again into the forest. What was that? Mother Tang screamed as she hobbled up. That was justice, the Mandarin said. He captured the tiger only to set him free. It was a tiger. It would do whatever it could to kill again. The tone of the Mandarin made it clear that there would be no arguing. He followed the law to the letter. He gave the tiger a chance for redemption, and the tiger would be allowed to have it. There was obviously something special about that creature, to allow itself to be captured without a fight. Now, the Mandarin told the widow, please see yourself out. Also, see that you never, ever, ever come to seek anything from me again. Thank you. The widow stormed off, and the Mandarin was exceedingly happy to finally be finished with the woman forever. Mother Tang heard what they said, that she would be dead soon. She knew it too, she just didn't care anymore. Something resembling justice had been done for her boy. That was the best apparently anyone could ask for. Her food was low, if not gone already, since she couldn't ask the neighbors for help indefinitely. They had their own to worry about, and it wouldn't be fair to burden them with her needs too. So, she would pass quietly. It wasn't the life she thought she would have, but there was a thud at the door. Mother Tang rose and saw the blur of orange when she opened the front door, and then looked down. A deer, it was dead, of course. It had its throat ripped out by a tiger, the same tiger that dragged it by its limb to her door, the same tiger that she had seen in court earlier that day. She glowered. This didn't make things right. Her words were only answered by the sound of the wind in the leaves. But she knew he heard her. Still, she thought as she looked on the deer, it would be a shame for such a beautiful deer to go to waste. Six months later, Mother Tang heard the sound at the door, and she leapt up, scurrying over. She just had her friends over for dinner and tea, and the young boy from down the way came to get rice for his family from Mother Tang's abundance. "Hey, where do you think you're going?" Mother Tang said when she saw the roll of fabric, lately worn from its time in the forest. The tiger hung his head. "No, you don't get to keep beating yourself up. I apologized. You get over it." She rubbed her fingers together. The tiger's tail raised up and he pranced over, entering the house. "Then where'd you get this?" Mother Tang asked. She hefted the roll of fabric that the tiger had brought. You know what? She didn't need to know. That night, as he had many nights before and would many nights after, the tiger curled up by Mother Tang's side as she enjoyed her tea, purring until both of them fell asleep by the fire. Years passed, and the tiger provided for Mother Tang as if he was her son. At first, the people were alarmed, but they eventually accepted that the tiger was special, and if Mother Tang could forgive and accept the man-eater, then the rest of the village could as well. When Mother Tang fell ill, the tiger wouldn't leave her side. He was with her when she died. Mother Tang left stark instructions for when the inevitable arrived, and she was buried at the foot of the mountain, next to the grave that held her son's shirt and axe. Her grave told the story of Tang, the judgment, and the tiger who transcended his nature. She donated everything she had to a nearby temple, but they found it difficult to possess the house or the land with the live tiger who, while not violent, made it very clear that he would not permit any disturbance to the house or any of the items inside. The tiger didn't live in the house, though. He could be found each night, huddled on Mother Tang's grave, as close as he could get to her. On quiet nights, the village could hear his soft wailing. Gradually, the tiger disappeared. And one day, the people realized that it had been years since they had seen the beast. The stories abounded. Nearly all assumed that it ambled off and died of loneliness in a cave somewhere. But the wise seemed to know something different. That, like some animals and monsters that find redemption, he had been rewarded for his virtue and taken to serve in the Western Heaven. Regardless, in a world where so many became demons, one tiger chose a different path and became a son. That one takes a bunch of twists and turns, and when I started reading it, I did not have quiet, heartbreaking meditation on life, death, and redemption on my bingo card. I liked how it seemed to defy my expectations multiple times to grow into something beautiful, unique, and unexpected. If you'd like to support the show, for less than the price of a sack of worms you can buy on Amazon for some reason, you can get extra episodes and ad-free versions of the show that aren't sold by someone with gigantic traps. Really, check out the logo for Uncle Jim's Worm Farm, linked in the show notes. It's like the direction for the logo design was, how about we have a farmer who also might be the juggernaut from that X-Men cartoon in the 90s? Anyway, check out mythpodcast.com/membership for more info on the membership. The creature this week is the Odontotyrannos, from Greek and Roman writers. Odontotyrannos, in Latin, means tooth tyrant. And it's not just an overly passionate and stern dentist who you will never be able to please, but also a large, horse-like creature that's bigger than an elephant. It has three horns on its head, which, in my opinion, is excessive and a little sci-fi monster-y. Two is the only normal level of horns. One, you're mythical. Three or more and you might as well be on Pandora. The ancient world was scary enough. So the Macedonian troops of Alexander the Great had, apparently, a kill-on-sight rule when it came to big, unknown, too-many-horned creatures. The tooth tyrant had some strong opinions regarding being killed, and did not want that. Which led to, in one version, 26 deaths among the troops of Alexander the Great. They did manage to kill it using its one weakness: being stabbed relentlessly until it didn't have any more blood. It didn't fear fire, and apparently didn't have a problem chewing through men in armor, but surrounding and stabbing the tyrant enough times would do it. Despite being teed up for a perfect allegorical comparison to Julius Caesar, the Romans apparently didn't go in for that sort of thing, in the same way that the later monks would when they wrote the bestiaries. It took anywhere from 300 to 1200 people to drag the monster from the river and cut it open, finding scorpions and a fish the size of an ox in its stomach. I am a little surprised by the level of detail in the accounts. And while, officially, Alexander the Great turned back from India because of his homesick troops, I think the real reason was the tooth tyrant, also translated to Lord of Teeth and King of Teeth. I mean, when Avatar nonsense starts leaping out of rivers at you, it's a good indication that you should probably head home. That's it for this time. Myths and Legends is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Broke for Free, and the Creature of the Week music is by Steve Combs. There are links to even more of the music we used in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.